There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Dom Harvey podcast brought to you by Radix Nutrition. Coming up, Stephen Seamus, host of the podcast Between Two Beers.
And we'd always thought like, oh shit, man, we should do something. We should start a podcast. We should start a show.
I didn't know what a podcast was when we started. So, like totally, totally true.
Yeah, I know. Podcasters talking about podcasting on a podcast. It doesn't sound all that interesting, but it's a lot more than that, so I do hope you'll enjoy this one. Maybe you are one of the many fans of the Between Two Beers podcast, or maybe this will be your introduction to the Between Two Beers podcast. Either way, welcome, and I'm glad you're here. Steve Holloway and Seamus Martin are a couple of mates from Hamilton who purchased a cheap microphone and started a podcast years ago, pre-COVID, long before podcasts were the shiny object they are today. And with talent, perseverance, persistence, and good old-fashioned hard work, they have built their podcast up into one of the top podcasts in New Zealand. And you only have to listen to an episode of their interview podcast to see why. They do a damn good job. This is a bit of an insight into the guys behind the podcast, Steve and Seamus. Quick technical issue to flag before we get into it. This was my very first ever podcast with two guests instead of one. I'm reluctant to call it a threesome. But because of this, I was in a different studio with a different microphone set up. So at times, the sound distorts a little. My apologies. But I hope you will push through the sound issues because this was a really good chat. Just before we get into it, big thanks to my sponsors, Radix Nutrition. I know I bang on and on about their protein powders and their incredible flavours, especially the banana and coconut, but they are so much more than just protein. From their state-of-the-art factory in the Waikato, they have plans to change the world through nutrition, and since I've got to know the team pretty well, I have no doubt they will succeed. Please, if I could ask one favour from you, it would be to give them a follow on Instagram and check out the incredible work they're up to. If I could ask two favours from you, it would be, once you follow them on Instagram, go and buy something from them. You won't regret it. Their products are simply world-class. Radix Nutrition, that's about R-A-D-I-X. You'll find them on Instagram and online, radixnutrition.co.nz. Okay, let's get into it. Between Two Beers on the Dom Harvey podcast. Enjoy.
Cheers, Dom. Stoked to be here, mate.
We opened these export... Cheers, by the way.
Yeah, cheers.
We opened these Export Ultras before we started recording. I feel like I should have done the welcome to...
I was waiting for Stephen for some reason to cue us in.
Right, because I'm a big fan of you guys and your podcast, and your intro's the same every time, I reckon. Or you could have them and overlap them, and the tone, the inflections, the same almost every time. Yeah. You nail it. It's great.
Yeah, by design. It's just, it slowly started, like, you crack open the beer and you get into it. And I was thinking, that's something that people are going to remember. And now we do a thing where we cut the little video for socials and there's always the little nod of the hat to the sponsor and the bottle opening.
I started the opening. So Stephen used to do the... So-and-so, welcome to Between Two Beers. And then I used to do the can open. And then when I stopped drinking, I passed the mantle back over to Stephen, so he handles everything now, and I just kind of sit in the passenger seat.
Yeah, well, hey, it's fabulous to have you guys on my podcast. I suppose there'll be like a number of people listening to this that'll be fans of you guys, and there'll be a number of people that are being introduced to you guys. But I like this. I like having – you had me on your podcast like over a year ago. And it's lovely to have you on my podcast. I think it's great.
Yeah. Crossovers.
Yeah, we're stoked to be here, Dom. Fans of what you do, like, I don't think people realise how hard it is to build a podcast following. And what you've done, how long have you been going now?
Okay, 18 months or so.
18 months. Continuously, one a week. Like, it's so impressive. Like, that people don't realise, unless you're doing a weekly pod, like, what's involved in the burn and turn of putting it all together.
Mm.
So
burn and turns are good. You should use that more often.
Yeah, but building an audience, like, there's so many people... trying to create pods now. Like, they're the hot, shiny object in media land, right? But it takes ages. Like, do you even remember the numbers of the early the episodes you had? Like, it takes a long time for the audience to grow and stick with you. So.
It really does. Mm. It's a grind. And I think it was you that said to me, Steve, it's relentless. It's never one a week. It's just never ending. Like, there is no – and it wasn't until that point that I really thought about it. I thought, oh, he's right. It is. And it's exhausting. Mm. Like, you're tracking down guests. You have guests that pull out, or they commit. Then something else comes up. And then it's stressful. And it's often a long time without any sort of reward in terms of – yeah, for the work you're putting in.
Yeah, there's some stat that, I don't know, 90% of podcasts don't make it past episode 7. And because it starts off with a hiss and a roar and you've got all these good ideas, and then it kind of turns into a job, which is why people ask, like, what's your advice for people starting off with a podcast? Do it for the right reasons. Do it because it's something you enjoy doing, which is why we started in my garage talking to our best mates and our family about football. And if it wasn't for that, we would have stopped after. If it wasn't fun, you know, there was no thought of financial reward or no thought of audience. It was just about
it was a chance to get out once a week. It wasn't even actually it wasn't even once a week then. It was just a chance to get out, get in front of someone, put a microphone in front of them, and then ask them a bunch of questions, which we never really had done. So it kind of gives you license to pry into people that you know's lives with without a care in the world.
Yeah, so it came from a good place. By the way, I listened to that episode today, episode 1, November 2019, with Aaron Scott. Who's Aaron Scott? A mate of yours, a soccer guy, football guy.
He is a grassroots football legend.
So he just played in the Chatham Cup final. He's got four kids. He's played 350 games for Melville. He's in the Chatham Cup final. They lost on penalties. But a guy who we'd grown up with, he played for the All Whites. He should have gone to the World Cup, but just got dropped from the squad. So we asked him about how hard that was, and he talked about Ricky Herbert and the fallout and all these things.
Have you listened?
No, I haven't. It rough as guts?
I listened. So did you listen to it today?
Just today, and it's quite cute. Like, there's a lot of what you're doing now that's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like at the beginning, Seamus, you say how you know the person.
Yeah.
But then there's like real cute aspects of it. Like, it sounds like there's one microphone.
Yes. Yes. Correct.
But I mean, it's palatable. The sound is fine. But from where you are now, like 4 years on to back then, shit, it's I'm getting actually goosebumps just talking about this and sharing this. You've come such a long way.
We spoke for about the first 15 minutes, I think, of that podcast. Aaron didn't say a word for about 15 minutes. We were just like prattling on about who we were and what we were doing. And then finally it was like, well, let's get a chance to hear from the guest, Aaron. But yeah, shit, it's a long way. And we had a moment, I think, like, history's repeated itself. So Melville, as Stephen said, have been in the Chatham Cup final recently as well, which was a catalyst for getting Azza on the show. And, hell, it's a long way away from Stephen's garage, that's for sure.
That's what it was. You say it sounded like a one mic. For the first 50 episodes, it was in my garage. Mm. It was a JB Hi-Fi $200 Omni microphone. And we just sat around a table like this. And Shay was drinking, I was drinking. With, you know, the conversations maybe got a bit looser as the ep went on. I probably drank more than I did now. But, yeah, it was just trying to ask the best questions to anyone we could get into my garage, basically.
There's other things that have changed like from a life perspective since then. Like, at the time, Steve, you mentioned you got two kids, now you got four kids and a vasectomy. Four kids and a dick that doesn't work.
I think four's enough.
Yeah, it's quite so back then. By the way, we'll go all the way back to how you guys even know each other, how this bromance, if you call it that, begun. But so there was no intention. This was just like a hobby, something for you to do. Did you secretly, like, deep down, have a desire to Rogan it?
No, not at all. It was we were both quite involved in the Melville Football Club, and we did a few videos before we started a podcast. We did this video series where we would chat to the coaches, who were also our best mates, and we quite enjoyed it. And we'd always thought, like, oh shit, man, we should do something. We should start a podcast. We should start a show.
I didn't know what a podcast was when we started. totally true.
And it wasn't until I bought the microphone. $220 was a lot of money back then, probably still is now. But I was like, oh, fuck it, I've bought the microphone, we're going to do it. And then I was like, right, Aaron, come across to our house on Thursday night. No expectation of anything. It literally just, like, see what happens. It didn't even go out on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It was just uploaded to SoundCloud, I think, at the time. Like, not even on YouTube, just SoundCloud, I think. And we just sort of sent the link around. Yeah, and maybe YouTube actually without the video. Anyway, just total amateur operation. Mm. But there was enough. There was, I don't know, 50 people listened to it maybe in the
football community. Who were they? Just friends? How did you market it? Just on your social media account?
I can't even remember.
Just put it on our Facebook page. And because Aaron's quite a known person in Hamilton football circles. Like he's quite a big deal for a small group of people. So just, yeah, our friends listened to it and got some good feedback. So episode 2 was Paul Nixon, who was my former school teacher and coached me when I was growing up. And this was kind of – so Paul had 4 kids and his wife passed away. And I – you know, I invited him to my wedding. He didn't turn up. He got the day wrong.
He got the day wrong. He turned up the day after.
But I knew him really well. But there were topics like that, and it's kind of been a theme. When you put a microphone in front of someone, it gives you permission to ask questions that you probably wouldn't otherwise. And I remember talking to him about that, what it was like raising 4 kids after his wife died of cancer. Mm. And it just, I was like, shit, they're onto something here. Like, it's just real conversations, real deep, meaningful conversations. And yeah.
It was like we started. I think Stephen, you sent me a link to what's old mate's name? Tools of Titans.
Oh, Tim Ferriss.
Tim Ferriss, and it was like a section of a podcast of his which spoke about asking good questions. So I think initially it was like we'd each come up with 10 questions, and that was kind of it. And we just rocked it from there. And it had a cult following within like Northern League football circles, and then it kind of grew to New Zealand football circles, and then it kind of gathered momentum. And I don't even remember our first non-football guest was Chris Ratu, I think, who was again 1 degree of separation, worked columnist at the Herald,
who worked with
Stephen. So it was really just who do we know, and who would be interested to come in, and that was the kind of the length of it.
Right. So when did you start to think, okay, we could probably scale up here and do something good?
I think it was Eric Murray. We made a trip to Eric Murray's house. So up until then, we had been a football show, and we were nobody. But Eric Murray, and I always think of these guys who opened their door to us when there was nothing for them to gain. There was no platform for them. He said, come over to my house in Cambridge, bring some beers, and we'll have a yarn. And we went over there with a dozen beers. I think he drank about 10 of them. And
in the first 15 minutes as well. He was hoovering.
Yeah. He's a big boy, though. Yeah, so
he was up for the chat.
Big dick energy was a term coined for Eric Murray. Like, that guy is just the most like upbeat, full-on energy. And it was an awesome episode. And I was like, holy shit, if we can get one of our greatest ever Olympians to open up like that, that transcends football and sport. That's going to appeal to everyone. And it got a bit wider reach than normal. Got some good, like Twitter was quite big for us back then. I think like Guy Havelt or someone like that shared it on Twitter. And like that was a big moment for us because, you know, he had thousands of followers. Yeah. And it's just really slow, small little gains. But mostly it just put fuel in our tank. We're like, fuck, that was fun. Like, who's next?
And then lockdown helped us as well because we were – no one was able to go anywhere. People were sitting around. We invested in StreamYard technology, which was kind of like Zoom on steroids. So it kind of kept a solid base. So we were able to keep ticking over while everyone was sitting around. And I guess that was good in terms of like just honing. Just there's that whole 10,000 hours rule, right? So it's just like just aggregating kind of our skill as we grew and grew and grew. And just got better and better at it. And then that consistency element came in eventually, I think, in year 2.
Yeah, I credit lockdown to our growth because when you're building a podcast, it's really hard to get high-profile guests, especially when you're starting out. Mm. Well, harder now because there's so many podcasts. At that point, there weren't quite so many. But with lockdown, people had nowhere to go. Like, no one had an excuse to be out anywhere.
And Aaron, I have to talk to someone.
We knew they had to be home. And so it was just a matter of just finding a night where they didn't have anything else to do. Have a couple of beers and we'll ask you good questions about your life. And we ticked off. Like, we were pretty prolific across that period. Yeah. Like, one a week and slowly you build a template to go to guests and say, oh, we just had John Kerwin on. We had Laura McGoldrick on. You know, would you consider coming on? And then it sort of snowballs, and like you probably experience
the same sort of thing. People are like, well, if it's good enough for Sir Ashley Bloomfield, then I will definitely come on. Yeah. That sort of thing. Yeah, you find that happen. It's almost like a dick swinging thing in a way.
Yeah.
When did you guys start to become like consistent? Because if you go back on Spotify, like to the very early episodes, it's like there'll be one and then maybe a month without another one.
Yeah.
So episode 50 was Ryan Nelson. So when you are a football podcast, there is no better guest than Ryan Nelson.
Yeah.
He is the Everest. We've just done Chris Wood, who would be a close second, I think.
K2.
But Ryan Nelson.
He's the mountaineering too.
And I remember we hit a wall. It was like, fuck, we've just clocked football. Where do we go from here? It's like, who is ever going to compare to Ryan Nelson? And I think we, did we have a few conversations about, like, should we continue?
Yeah, I think it was around Ryan Nelson. I think the other one was the arrival of Billy, Stephen's third child. And it was kind of like, well, I'm going to have to take some time off to support Bon and look after the kids. And it was kind of like, oh, well, fuck, that's the end of that. Like, a month will turn into 6 weeks, will turn into 2 months. And what was a good kind of idea will just fade away into the distance like so many before. But for some reason, we doubled down.
Because no financial gain. 50 episodes.
It's a hobby, isn't it?
Not making any money. Taking a lot of time. Like, we're traveling to Auckland to bring a microphone.
Yeah, shout out to the patrons that jumped on. So we set up a Patreon account, and I'd kind of only ever heard it on, like, YouTube videos of, like, subscribers can do this bits and piece. But that sustained, like, our website, our StreamYard, like, just kind of the little bits and pieces so that we were hand to mouth almost, but we were investing our own money into kind of making it work, like Stephen said, driving around the place, just enjoying other people's company.
But yeah, when your wife is looking after two young kids when you're off driving to South Auckland to talk to Kevin Fallon, she's like, really? Like, what are we doing here, guys?
Well, I mean, at that point, it's basically going out for 9 holes of golf, isn't
it?
The Patreon thing, like, have you got all right money out of that over the years? I've been reluctant to go with a pay sort of model because I just feel like Kiwis aren't into it.
Yeah, look, we haven't put that much effort into it. It's like people set up a Patreon and they give special things to people that sign up.
Yeah.
And we never, for whatever reason, we were just like, look, if you'd like to support the show, that would be awesome. But we're not going to do anything extra. And so it's been pretty consistent. It's a small amount. It's like $400 a month. But not many have cancelled. Like, they're the OGs. Yeah. They're the ones that stuck with us from the early days from football, and they're kind of just still there.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like, as Seamus says, it keeps the lights on.
Yeah. Mm. Generally speaking, the only cancellations are just when credit cards expire. people have forgotten that they were members, and it just doesn't renew, and they're kind of like, hey, do you still listen to the podcast? Yeah, of course I do.
Or when people do one of those yearly checks, like, what is this? Yeah. Amazon Prime? I haven't watched that in months.
Cost a cup of coffee. Yeah. Bullshit. It's way more.
Okay, so let's go all the way back. So how do you guys know each other? Steve, you were a real good soccer player, right, at a regional level.
Yep.
Is that fair to say?
Yep, I think that's really.
and you're a journalist, and Seamus, you're like a sports administrator?
Yeah, so we go back to high school. We go back to Hamilton Boys High.
You're the same age?
No. I was going to... Oh, good. Thank you. I'll sort you out later.
I just realised what I said. I don't want to look at anyone in particular.
Yeah, no, very good. I'm a lot younger than Stephen. No, we were in the same tutor class, we call it. I don't know what it is in the modern vernacular, but, you know, when you've got, like...
Tutor,
Year 13s down to year 9s. Third form through to seventh form, your registration class in the morning. So we were in the same class. I was the captain of the first 11 football at that stage, and Steve was a young up-and-coming footballer, as you said, and he played for the school first 11 in fourth form, which was very unheard of back then.
Wow.
And took you under my wing at the inaugural Super 8 tournament down at Inglewood.
That's right.
In Taranaki, and we kind of just kept in contact after that from that point
Shay
onwards.
Shay became a mentor, so he sort of was out in the real world as I was – you know,
still at school, navigating
those difficult teenage years. And he used to send, do you remember he used to send emails, and they'd have like little motivational quotes and stuff when he was working at Pizza Hut and he was at sort of World Cups and things.
Yeah.
And Shay was this big wise guy of the world.
Still am. I think I still am.
Like a Buddha.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly.
So it was it a friendship or like a mentor sort of situation?
Yeah, it's an interesting one to look back on because, like Stephen said, I was a few years older, so I was already like it really was galvanized. Talk about Chatham Cups earlier. So Melville went on the Chatham Cup run in 2003, and Stevie was like the hero at age 17, and they won this game at Century United. They were Kiwi Tier Street, like a glamour club here in Auckland. And all of the fans, of which I was one of them, like flooded the pitch at the end of it. And I remember locking eyes with Stephen on the pitch and giving him a big hug. And at some point, I was after that, I was like, fuck, that was like this real weird magical moment. He then went off to the US to go on a college scholarship.
Oh, you were real good.
Yeah, he was really good. Nationally good. That's why I said, no, he wasn't regionally good. He was nationally good.
How did you end up a journalist and a broke podcaster?
Yeah.
How did you fuck it up so badly?
Yeah, I ask myself that all the time. Don't get into journalism.
Yeah. It's the hips. It's the hips. It's the hips and hammies.
I think that's a fair retelling.
Wait, and you've kept in touch all the way through?
Yeah. That's when I was sending the emails, when he was in America.
Right.
And then... I think when you come back after you graduated, I was working for a football organization here, a regional football organization, and he came in and worked in the media department, lasted a period of time, maybe a year, year and a half.
Yeah. Shay was head of competitions at Oceania Football Confederation, which is, you know, it was quite a big job. I was a worker in the media department. So, yeah, I would walk down the hallway every day. We'd go have lunch.
Yeah,
about 2 years.
And then he chucked it in to become a poker player.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually.
Yeah.
I can't tell if he means it or not. Is that a poker face?
Exactly.
Is this right? This feels very Forrest Gumpy.
Lots of strands. No, I left the OFC job to chase a professional dream. So I wanted to be a professional footballer.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I went across to Australia and I had a contract which didn't work out. And I ended up back at my parents' house in Hamilton. And so I was 23, 24. The global recession had just hit. And there weren't a lot of jobs out there. So I was like, well, shit. When I was in America, I played poker a lot during the summer and I earned a little bit of money from it. Can I dedicate myself to poker for 1 month and how much money can I earn? And I did it for 1 month and I earned $1,000 a week US. I was like, oh, shit, that's pretty good. Probably more than I would earn at any other job. Can I do this? Can I put 3 months together? If I can put 3 months together consistently, then I will consider myself a professional poker player and I'll move to Mount Maunganui. And I did it. So I moved to Mount Maunganui. And when I was there, I met up with these big-time poker players who did tournament poker. So long story short, they took me under their wing. We moved to a big house in Papamoa. There was seven of us, all professional poker players. It's my wife came in and lived with us when we were there. And we played poker. We bought in for $3,000 to $4,000 of tournaments every day. We played 4 days a week. We drank a lot. We partied a lot. We all moved to Queenstown together. I shacked up with Chris Mormon, who we had on the podcast, who is the winningest online poker player of all time. He's won about $40 million playing poker. He lived with us. So it was this wild ride of poker, about 3 years, traveling around, just working off my own schedule, learning from these masterminds. And then they all moved to Vegas, bought a house there. I was with Bon. We didn't fancy it. Moved to Auckland. Did it for about another 6 months to a year where I was – everyone else in my house would get up and they would leave and go to work. And I would sit there with a computer. There would be about 16 games I'd be playing at a time. And I was like, this is an antisocial – like this isn't the future. Like I need to get out of this. So I got out of it. I applied for a job at the Herald and I've been there for the last – 13 years.
So Stephen's dad is a top journalist from Hamilton, from the Waikato Times. So a sports journalist from way back. So journalism's in his blood as well. So downplaying that side of it a little bit. And then all the while that was happening, I was doing all this stuff in football and soccer administration, going to World Cups in Germany and Canada and all around the world and kind of doing – getting my life experience through my vocation, which was pretty cool at the same time, but not conducive to kind of a great lifestyle.
Yeah,
so it kind of looked flashy from the outside, but probably on the inside was a little bit kind of shallow.
When did the McDonald's story happen? This is something that comes – anyone that listens to your podcast, I suppose on a regular or semi-regular basis, will hear Seamus tell a McDonald's story. And Steve almost – it's kind of playful banter, I guess.
Yeah.
But you can always feel you eye-rolling on the inside.
Yeah, it's like when he talks about poker.
Your handbrake is a McDonald's story. What is the McDonald's story for anyone that's new to you guys?
So in 2012, I was the team operations – team ops for the New Zealand men's football team that went to the London Olympics. So if you've ever been to an Olympic Games, you go to the athlete village, there's whatever food that you want. And there's a McDonald's in there because they're an official partner. So together with the physio, Roland Jeffrey, who's another early guest of ours on the podcast, we decided before we flew that we would have a cheeseburger eating competition to see who could eat the most. Now, I'm far, far superior to him in terms of my size.
Capacity.
Exactly. And so it was all kind of it was the talk of the group and we were ready to go. So the games hadn't started yet. So we all piled down to the dining hall And yeah, sure enough, one after one, these cheeseburgers started coming out, and like the lads were all around. You had 18 players, like six staff. Some of the other New Zealand staff had come down. So we just ate and ate and ate. And then like we lost the day afterwards. We were both ruined. And then we woke up. We were in Austria because the team had a pre-tournament game over in Austria. But in the post-match, the post-games kind of debriefs, apparently the story goes that the Black Sticks hockey team wrote a formal complaint to the New Zealand Olympic Committee that the New Zealand under-23 men's football team didn't take competition seriously. They were all eating McDonald's before the competition, and they were just treating it like a big joke. So
I can't believe I've sat through the cheeseburger story again. We banned it from the podcast. Yeah. I was like, I can't believe it's come
up. You did it very well. Yeah, you sat there politely and let me have my moment. Well told, thank you very much, Dom. Well told.
Yeah. So who do you think your favourite guest has been so far? Is it hard for you to have one?
I find it really hard to when people ask me that question, I find it really hard to kind of narrow that down. So I'm going to let Steve answer it while I think long and hard about who that's been.
Okay, I can even give you three or five if you want.
Yeah.
Do they all sort of blend into one for you?
A little bit. And there's recency bias. So it's almost like the guests who have, you know, been in the last couple of months are more top of mind. The one which was a bit of a breakthrough for us was Dave Wood. So Dave is Israel Adesanya's mental skills coach and breathing coach. And he was a bit of a late. So we had a guest pull out, and his wife, who's also his business partner, reached out to us and said, oh, would you like Dave on your pod? And we're like, yeah, all right, it'd be fine. And then looked into his story, and holy shit, his story was amazing. And he was a guest which I would say most people didn't know. And it was one of our most popular episodes. And it just opened up this whole world of health and wellness. And I went and did his Come Under Pressure workshop. And we've had a really good relationship since. I've got hip issues. He's been helping with me, my hips. And it's kind of the story of a lot of guests is the relationships we develop with them. Because what we're doing and what you're doing with long form podcasts over 90 minutes, we're asking people to be really vulnerable and really authentic. And when you have those conversations and those connections, you like it's meaningful. You develop like friendships a lot of the time. The other one that springs to mind, and I know you've had her on as well, is Mia Motu. And that podcast overwhelmed me. So at the end, I sort of held it together quite well because her story, for those that don't know, is incredibly inspiring and equally horrific, the domestic abuse she suffered. And she's so bubbly and fun and energetic and lively and such an amazing person. At the end, I was reflecting on basically her story and where she is, a world champion from someone who was living in a car with her two kids and a dollar and had absolutely nothing and had suffered this terrible abuse. And all the emotion came pouring out of me, and I was trying to do the wrap up and I just started crying and I just couldn't sort of stop. And Shay was really good. And we've learned this through the journey that it's okay to sit in silence and let them have the moment. So he didn't try to jump in. He just sort of waited for me to regather my composure. And then I sort of finished it off and passed it on to him. So whenever I think of which episodes affected me the most, I mean, that clearly did. That was really, really strong.
Yeah, actually, I cried with Mia as well. I found myself breaking down. Like, we just got to a point in the interview, and we talked about the frequency of the beatings that she got over a period of a decade. And I said, they stopped, though, during your pregnancies, right? And she was like, no, they didn't. And it just hit me right at that moment. So horrible. And you think, I don't know, when I had her in, I was having a shit week. I had some stuff going on. And then you realize, like, whatever adversity, like 99% of people have got going on in their lives, it's nothing compared to what she went through. And as you said, she's so bubbly and so lovely and so positive.
Yeah, I like to think they were happy tears. I wasn't crying because of what had happened to her. I was crying because of what she had come through and achieved and the person she is now and the inspiration she is to people out there who are, I mean, the thing you learn about this is everyone's story impact, like the ripple on effect of people listening and getting affected and being helped by these messages is so powerful just by talking about it and voicing it. And I had friends who commented to me about they had been suffering similar situations and hearing her talk about, you know, being open about it and talking about it and battling through. It's just so helpful.
You know, one thing you said just before that I want to pick up on, you talked about it's okay sitting in silence. And that is a big – there's so many things that you guys do in your podcast that I've sort of borrowed, I guess, or stolen, plagiarized.
Everyone's, we stole from someone else. Yeah. We stole from Tim Ferriss.
Plagiarized. Because of my commercial radio background, there's this natural sort of tendency that's inbuilt in me to jump in and not be able to sit in any silence. And I'm trying to unlearn that. And I've got a lot from you guys. Even stealing every time I say the line, talk about this in as much or as little detail as what you want. I say to myself, fuck, come up with another way of saying the same message. I'm inspired by what you guys do. I think you do a remarkable job.
Oh, thank you. It's high tide rises all boats, right? So, like, the I think the beauty of this part of what we've been doing as well is just seeing everybody else get on the journey. And there's a real humbling sense that people are now looking at us as people that they can learn off, which is fucking blows my mind to think we're sitting here with a guy that I listened to for majority of my adolescent years who loves what we do. Like, it's a real interesting kind of dynamic to find yourself in.
Yeah, it's a different skill set, so I find I'm learning. Whenever I go to the Apple chart and I see I'm ahead of you guys, I'm like, oh, get a screen cap of that. Because I feel you guys are the leaders, I think, the long-form podcast thing. But one thing I'm finding, which is quite nice, it's, you know, we can have the same guest on and it doesn't feel like it matters. I don't know. I feel like there's enough difference in our style of podcast that people aren't going to go, I've heard Miyamoto. I don't want to hear her again.
Well, it actually helps us in our method as well, because we aggregate the best kind of stories from everywhere. So if there's more of that person out there, for us, it makes our research kind of task easier. But I think you're right. I think everybody's kind of got a different lens and they'll find some part of somebody's story different, even between the two of us. We find different pieces of somebody's story quite different because we've got different outlooks on life, different kind of previous experiences that we can lean into and rely on as well. So I think it's an amazing kind of space that we find ourselves in. And like, I've finally cracked on my favorite episode, and I'll loop right back to that one. But it's kind of that idea or that notion of kind of challenging perceptions, and it was Grant Fox, and it was Foxy when, like, growing up, I saw him as this kind of austere guy that played for the ABs and was kind of much maligned, and then he transitioned into being a coach and a selector, and he kind of had this media persona. But then when he came into the episode with us, and he spoke so emotionally, I think, about his work with Big Brother and, you know, his friendship with the late Sir Martin Crowe.
Yeah. He welled up and started crying.
Yeah, and I think it's a weird moment there when you've got three men sitting in a conversation that are just very comfortable in each other's emotions and letting somebody go in their emotion, whereas, I don't know, like, kind of you're brought up of a certain generation that you know, men don't cry and you've got to hold everything in and be stoic and be this person. But that's one of the great things I think about the platform in general, not just what we do, but what a whole lot of podcasters do, is that they're bringing these conversations, these topics to light and normalizing the conversation around them as well.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
How are you guys with vulnerability yourself and being... like in terms of walls and stuff? Like, have you always been good, Steve, or do you find like being married and being a dad of four now, it's like with each birth the wall comes down a little bit?
It really does. I think when we started, I would have been quite stoic and afraid to show emotion. And things just get me now, which I think it's the kids. I think it's the family, and like with Mia's story, the kids involved, like pulls on strings, but also, because we've been doing this journey together, me and Shay, best friends who started this thing in my garage, and now we're on this sort of epic wave and we're not really sure where it's going, there are moments where we reflect on, you know, difficult times for us, which get me as well. And there'll be tight, like...
What do you mean? Have you got an example?
Guy and Espinner came on our show, and really weird dynamic, because our show is Between Two Beers, and it's sponsored by Export Gold. Guyon was on to promote his book about how better his life has been.
It's called The Drinking Game.
Since he stopped giving up alcohol. And Seamus has been off the booze for about 2 years now. And towards the second half of the episode, Shay started sort of talking about his experience with booze. And Shay, I don't want to speak on your behalf.
Go for it, man.
But...
is it the cheeseburger story again?
Shay is in probably having the best year of his life. Like, he is smashing it on all fronts. And I remember we might have started the pod. It might have been early days. He was not in a great place. Like, struggling.
Hmm. Sorry, man. Go for it.
And... yeah, as you can see, when I think about how far he's come and how difficult those conversations were, it gets me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's been really good in terms of making sense of the world for me. It's given me a voice where sometimes a lot of maybe what I was thinking or things that were rattling around in my head, they wouldn't come out, and they'd bottle them in. And my way of coping was to turn to the bottle, and it was to drink and to suppress those emotions and maybe not deal with them. And you get courage from other people having the courage to share their story, and it gives you a little flicker of, I felt like that, or I've been in that position. And I think with the podcast, you've got to give to get, and I think...
Yeah, it's like a vulnerability exchange, isn't it?
Yeah, but not in a fucking like you drink 7 up and I drink 8 up, you know what I mean? Like it's not about like who's had a shitter experience, but it's about I guess showing who you are and showing that you understand. You have a level of empathy, and it has been like in terms of that situation. I was in the darkest depths that I had been.
Was there any sort of like catalyst?
I think probably I was looking around in like comparison as a thief of joy or whatever that saying goes. And I was sort of mid-late 30s, no relationship. I was living at home with my mum, which is totally fine. But
you're Duncan Garner, if you're listening to this, it's all good.
But, you know, like life is a shared experience as well. So, you know, I'd love my mum dearly and I love spending time with her. But there is an element of joy that was probably missing. So while I was able to do some cool things and travel around and have exciting experiences, you want to share those with people, right? You want to share them that aren't just your family. So there was probably a little bit of sadness and probably a little bit of avoidance in that kind of time of my life. And, they were probably all coming home to roost. I was, feeling a bit sorry for myself being, like I said, that age, no house, no kind of assets, not that they'd be all and end all, but in my mind, it was where it was. So it was, a little bit of courage, and I'd like to say a little bit of nous or a sense from Stephen that something was up. And then we had a really, you know, challenging conversation at a cafe with another one of our good friends, a good supporter of the podcast, Gav Douglas, around what's going on and you know, have you thought about doing anything silly? And I had at that stage thought about, you know, maybe the world would be a better place if I kind of wasn't around in it. And, it's a hard conversation to have with a mate. It's a hard conversation to have on a microphone, and it's a confronting one to throw it out to the world for them to kind of consume, and the shame and fear of judgment and what that means for you as a person. But the overwhelming response to anything that I think either of us have ever thrown out there has been one of aroha and one of love coming back.
Yeah, for sure.
And understanding and acceptance of those things. So that's a really powerful foundation to kind of launch from. And, yeah, I am having a great year. It's going really good.
You just had a little twinkle in your eye, like a relationship thing, you mean? All this you think is like largely as a result of the non-drinking?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's definitely like, yeah, there's shit times where you've got to sit with the feeling of whatever you're feeling and go, fuck, I really have to unpack why I'm feeling this way or why I'm reacting to this situation. But it's a lot for me. Not saying it's the same for everybody else, but for me, it's a lot of a better way to kind of work through that and be comfortable in your own skin about who you kind of who you are and what you're about. Because fuck, you are who you are at the end of the day.
I heard a podcast that a podcast I really like called Diary of a CEO. You guys are familiar with that one, eh?
Very much so.
Yep. And Steve-O from Jackass was on there, and he talked about the disease of alcoholism, and he goes, any disease you have, your goal is generally to get back to the person you were before, like meaning, say, cancer, for example. You just want to get back to where you were. He said, like, the disease of like alcoholism or drug addiction, it's the only disease where when you give it up, your life will be better.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, that is a great way of looking at it. So was it kind of an intervention? Like casually, an intervention? Fuck, Steve, that must have taken a lot of balls on your part.
It was a checkup. It was, you know when things are a bit off and you get a sense that they're more serious than what's been led on. And I felt like it needed a really clear question to get to what the fuck is like. When Shay was in this dark space, he was shielding how bad it was. And it wasn't until I asked, are you considering doing something silly or whatever it was, that it opened this chat up. And far, man, like, yeah, it sent us on a bit of a ride. Like, we were, I don't know how much you want to talk about it, but we were booking shrinks and we were, like, yeah, talking right. to your that, brother. Yeah. And, like, there was this whole thing. And I like to think it was a really cool thing. Like, there was a group of us best mates, and we all came together and we're like, shit, we're a bit worried about Shay here. Like, what are we going to do? And that community that came around you, fuck yeah.
That's, I feel like it's a big friendship risk, eh? Like, he could have taken it the wrong way and, stormed out, or then just been aloof with you moving forward with the information that he shares with you.
No, I suppose you have to be ready for the... Our friendship was tighter than that. It was never going to go to there. It was always going to be, this just means we have to address what's going on. Mm. This just means we actually have to face this front on. And, yeah, just fucking hug the big guy and let's get him through it, which is why I'm so emotional. It's just because you don't often reflect on...
Well, we've never reflected on it until now. Like, a conversation happened... We were in a cafe, surface level spoken about it maybe since then. I don't think I've ever spoken to Gavin about it ever since.
No.
So you kind of, you just, yeah, you brush over it and you kind of move on.
Yeah, I mean, what are your recollections of it?
Same level of detail. When you mentioned it, like, I do remember that someone contacted my brother, because weirdly I got a phone call out of the blue, like, just asking how I was, which doesn't always... Or hadn't always happened.
How did you reply? I'd probably be like, "Yeah, nah, all good."
Yeah, that's probably my default, or make a gag or something like that. But I maybe didn't realize that it was so obvious or apparent from the outside. It was probably on the tail end of quite a challenging time where I was up in Papua New Guinea for 2 years working on a project which really pushed me to my limit, every which way you could imagine. So it, I was maybe just in a bit of a blur at that stage. I don't remember really when I came out of it. I don't know. But then it, like, that was even before the drinking stopped. So I think we had that situation and then carried on boozing, for a while. And then the boozing finished 2019.
Yeah. So that was a separate 2020 conversation. Right, like that wasn't.
Oh, I'm getting them confused. Okay, so when did this one happen?
That would have been 2018.
Maybe
this is before the podcast even started.
The podcast. Right. And then the drinking conversation was a separate one.
Yeah.
It had just annoyed me, to be honest, because Shay, for anyone listening to this, like, Shay is the most charismatic man in the room. Like, he comes in, he makes everyone feel comfortable, he's the life of the party. But after a few beers, he would just get sloppy, and he would get, I wouldn't like hanging out with him after he'd, maybe like one beer, fine, two beers, okay, and after that I was just like, mate, I actually don't like hanging out with you when you've been drinking because.
Well, what do you mean sloppy? Like a spit talker?
Pesty, just pesty and
just
like I'm very just, clever, like very witty and very clever. Right, like very, very, very good level of gags, but then like a really seedy undertone to the gag. But you know, what? I could recognise that behaviour and. It was just picking up the pieces in the next morning as well and being like, fuck, it was like a broken record conversation of like, I'm here again. But it was conversations were often in my kind of own head. And I do remember vividly that first instance, that first flare-up where he was having a pop at me and I didn't like it. And I think I didn't like it because I knew it was...
No one's going to like it, are they?
No, but I think also it ate away because I knew he was right and it was like, fuck.
I remember saying like, you're just not... This is like a fucking weird therapy session.
Like, no, it's great. I appreciate
it. You're not living up to your potential. Like, you've got so much potential. Like, you're starting to fulfill your potential, But back then, you're in some fucking shitty job and you're pissed up. And I was like, man, you've got so much to give. Fucking cut the booze out. Like, let's get this train back on the tracks.
Shit, that's nice. I think that's the greatest gift you can give someone as a friend, eh? Like, have the courage to have that conversation. It'd be much easier just to bite your tongue and not have it.
But I had bit my tongue for a long time, and I think that was the culmination. Like,
his tongue was raw.
Yeah. He was like, famous,
you need to stop drinking.
But it's a weird relationship with booze because for so long we had also championed it. Like, we used to go to these Labour weekend tournaments where Shay would be doing 16 funnels on the sideline and we'd all be chanting, Seamus, Seamus. Like, he was the hero because he could sink so much piss. Mm. So it's kind of like,
yeah, and that gives you this weird gratitude, like gratification kind of cycle as well.
It's a badge of honour. Yeah, it was a thing, and you know, Shay, he can hold his piss.
Yeah.
Insert name here, he can hold his piss. It was, and probably still is, I guess, a badge of honour. I don't know, I feel like the conversation's changed, but then I'm old as shit now, so if I go out and say I don't want to drink, I don't have anyone calling me a pussy.
Yeah,
it's an age thing. Yeah, that was mid-20s, late-20s. Like, you can't be doing that when you're...
I still could. Frank the Tank.
Just not the same doing a Powerade out of a shoe, is it?
Yeah.
That's really, really special.
But I think it's an example as well for friendships that we can have that level of directness and honesty in conversation. And it's probably been honed in this kind of environment where we do have license to ask challenging questions to people. And then to take that out of this environment into kind of everyday life is a skill as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd agree. I've been doing it a lot shorter time than what you guys have. But one thing I've realized is that everyone's got shit going on.
Yeah.
Absolutely everyone. And when you realize that, it's actually quite comforting. It's like, oh, okay, I'm not special. I'm not alone. It's just everyone's got shit going on, even people that you wouldn't even expect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think that's cool.
It's a broken record as well. But, you know, like if by listening or comparing yourself, if there is one person out there, it's a fucking cliche, it winds me up. But if there is one person out there that takes some solace and can avoid the feelings that you felt yourself in that moment, then that's fucking worth it.
Yeah.
That's worth the embarrassment or kind of the discomfort of being in that space or having that conversation or facing up to that reality.
Mm.
Really is.
Yeah. And how's your mental health now? You good?
Yeah, I'm really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am really good. It's I really enjoy the ability to do what we do, and I find it quite hard to nail down like a favorite episode is because when I listen back to everything that we do, like from Welcome to Between Two Beers to the outros that I tend to throw together. That's not a dig at you.
Yeah, I don't.
But like they're just packed with little nuggets of wisdom, and they're amazing gifts that we've been privy to that Yeah, they just they do all blend into one, but I always find there's some little piece that I can pull from whoever we've spoken to that I can adapt and relate to whatever I'm going through or feeling or make sense of at that moment. It's fucking awesome. So, yeah, really good, really good, really good headspace right here, right now.
Well, that's brilliant. Because being in that space where you're like, wow, do I want to live anymore? It's like it's not a great place to be, is it?
No.
It's not nice.
No, it's horrendous.
Like, and I don't think anyone actually really wants to die. They just want the pain to stop.
Yeah.
But I suppose that's the thing. You can stop. Actually, I don't think the pain actually stops, though. So it gets transferred around to other people around you.
Yeah, yeah, it's totally. Like, when you're in that space where you'd rather sleep than go, than leave the house for the day, that's not a great kind of place to be. Mm. But there are people in there. And anyone that is in that space that might be listening to this at the moment, man, just reach out, talk to someone. Give those thoughts some air, because the worst place they can kind of reside and stay is in your own head.
Yeah. And what about you, Steve? How's your mental health been?
Yeah, good.
I suppose the reason I asked this is I know you've been into like cold showers and Wim Hof stuff. But I don't know. For me personally, I'm probably projecting here. Yeah, I found that something incredibly useful for my mental health, and other people that I've met that have done like Wim Hof stuff and cold showers, same sort of thing. It's like they're looking for a solution or something to make them feel mentally better.
Yeah, I went through a phase I'm 38 now, maybe in my early 30s through experimentation. And I was trying all these different things and life hacks and seeing what really connected with me. And I got really into the Wim Hof method, which is the breathing and the cold showers. Yeah. I love the breathing. And in our early episodes, I talked about a lot, like how good it was. And I always thought that would be something I would always do. But I don't do that anymore, but I still do the cold showers. I still do the cold immersion is the one that stood the test of time. So for the last 3 years, maybe 4 years, I've had a cold shower every morning, every night. And there's all sorts of scientific benefits that go along with it. But for me...
You've never had a hot shower in 4 years?
No, I have had a hot shower. It's the psychological win. You know, when you get in that shower, you're going to have a shower regardless. The easy thing to do is to turn it warm. The hard thing to do is to turn it cold. So if you turn it cold and you conquer that challenge, you get your day off, that'll be the hardest thing. Like middle of winter, having a cold shower at 5 a.m, that will be the hardest thing you do for the whole day. If you can get a little win under your belt early doors, like you just feel $1 million. It's just like a kickstarter to the day.
Yeah.
And I've found that you talk about mental health. The thing that I have learned is that the hardest things to do are the ones that make me feel the best. And there's a few things, and there's like fasting. I do long fasts. I'll eat with the kids at 5 o'clock, will be my first meal of the day. It's cold showers. It's swimming, which I wasn't able to run anymore after like running being a big part of my life. And I hated swimming. And I dreaded the thought of getting in the pool.
Mm.
Then I got swimming lessons as an adult man, got swimming lessons. And now I swim. And it's something I hated and I really disliked for a long time, weeks and weeks and weeks. And now I love it. So it's these things which are difficult to start with that you overcome, and then you – I'm not going to say I love a cold shower, but I love the feeling afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. I fully agree. I think you're doing hard things helps build resilience, doesn't it? It gives you a bit of self-pride.
Yeah. Being comfortable in the uncomfortable is just like I'm so on board with that. Mm. And every part of my life, whenever I come across something which I feel is quite challenging, and with 4 kids and a job and a podcast and coaching 2 teams, there's a lot going on. But I always just, I sort of walk into those challenges. But also perspective. And again, from the guest, it's like, fuck, yeah, there's a lot on, but it's not that hard compared to what Brad Smale has been through, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the thing. Shay, you mentioned the saying before, comparison is the theft of joy, but if you don't have to compare down very far to see how good you've got it, whether it's your Miyamoto's or your Brad Smaler or whoever.
Josh Komen's, like.
Oh, incredible human.
Yeah, that was like those, and I think to your point before about we've had similar guests on, I don't think any amount of retelling of Josh's story in particular will ever do it justice. I think it's a story that a lot of people need to listen to not in terms of what he's had to go through, but in terms of the outlook that he has on life. Like that's been my, like we spoke before about, you know, where are you at and is this the best year? Like I think just my outlook and my perspective of life has changed through the interactions that we've had with people, not only on the podcast, but people who listen to the podcast, who take the time out to, you know, reply and provide feedback. Like, I love when you share feedback that you receive, because it does mean a lot. It means a lot to you because it's a justification for the effort that you're putting in and the respect that you're giving the person in terms of that conversation that that other people can pick up on.
What was the one you had you shared about someone considering taking their life and then listening to an episode?
Oh my God! Oh yeah, that was remarkable. An email I got a couple of weeks ago from a lady that said she was thinking about taking her own life, and a friend came. By the way, the appalling advice from the friend. The friend was like, "Listen, just listen to this podcast, listen to a few episodes of this. No, don't do that in future." Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a few steps you should do before that. Give it a number for Lifeline or whatever. Yeah. But it's touching. Yeah, the conversations that I'm having, which I guess there's parallels between the three of us and what we do. Feedback like that is so meaningful, eh?
Totally.
It's really cool. Yeah. And I can't speak on behalf of you guys, but it gets me through those dry spells where there's, no sponsorship money in sight and you're like, what the fuck am I doing? How long do I do this before I go and get a real job again?
Yeah, yeah. It's a really weird place, the podcast scene in New Zealand. And you're right, you get fueled by feedback and little dribs and someone might sort of come up to you in the street and say, I love the podcast. Like that is kind of, for a long time, that is all we had to get going. But it feels like there's a wave building. It feels like I don't know. Anyone in the media now has a podcast, right? Mm. Tova's got one. Duncan Garner's got one. All the big stars. It's kind of like this wave is rising together, and the outlook seems pretty bright.
Well, it makes sense that it's the future of media. I say to people, it's like radio's like free-to-air TV. Podcast is like, Neon or Netflix or whatever. It's like radio on demand.
Mm. It is.
It makes perfect sense.
And it's people are making a choice to listen and making a choice to spend that amount of time, the most precious resource, to listen to what you are doing. So it's incredibly valuable as well.
Yeah, those connections, they're remarkable. Like a radio interview feels like a transactional sort of performance in a way. It's like 4 minutes, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
As a host, you want to ask some funny questions and hopefully get some funny, snappy answers, and then you're out. It's just so transactional. Yeah. Then they're off to the studio next door. So in the space of an hour, they'll do like 10 interviews and it's meaningless.
Yeah.
And Steve, you and I had this chat shortly after I started last year, and Eric Murray messaged me after our one and said, oh, that was really good. Let's catch up next time without the microphones and just have the chat. It's really cool.
Someone asked us a while back. Actually, it's a question we get quite a lot, is how often do you socialize with guests? And it got us thinking about the relationships we've had with people since they've been on the show. And I was like, shit, we went out for dinner with Brody Kane. We hang out with Mike Minogue quite a bit. I play golf with Marcus Daniel.
Dom's been to your house.
Dom's been to my house. And you're like, shit. You think about the network that you're developing and the community you're building. And I said this on one of our Ambassador podcasts, but after a certain age, it actually gets quite hard to make friends. Like
it does. It's weird. It's like, you want to hang out? What do you mean?
School, no problem. But you get to a certain point, it's like, well, it's kind of hard to invest the time to get to really know someone, to put the groundwork in to develop friendships. But we've found the hack. We've found the shortcut for it, because we'll get you in for 90 minutes and we will cover all of the highs and lows of your life. We'll be vulnerable. You'll be authentic with us. And like I said, we connect that connection and we know the people so well, because it's not only the episode we're producing. We have also listened to probably four or five different podcasts that I've done with different people. So we know so much more about them than actually goes out to air. And when someone puts the spotlight on you for 90 minutes and they ask really good questions and they're empathetically listening to the answers and they're there with you on your journey, like it's just a shortcut to absolute connection. So it's really cool. It's almost like we make a new friend every week.
So. Yeah, it is. That's exactly what it's like.
I do feel like that's the that's a strength you guys do. You over prepare and. As someone that's been a guest on your podcast, like you can see that and you want to deliver. You want to give everything you've got back to you guys because you know that you've put so much effort in. That's just my theory anyway.
No, Dion Nash said that to us after we recorded with him just up the road, I guess, at Triumph and Disaster. At the end of it said, man, you could tell within the first 10 minutes that you guys had really prepared for it and then – yeah, there's an obligation if someone's made the effort that, yeah, you meet them. It's the same thing as that vulnerability chat we were having before. You meet them kind of halfway on middle ground. And it makes for cracking interactions and connections.
Mm. And it is as a result of these conversations, isn't it? As Shay said before, I've been to Steve's house. Toys everywhere.
Yeah.
No, I was in Taupo doing some speaking thing, and I was on my way back, and I said, I'll message Steve and see what you're up to. And you kindly invited me around to your house, even though you had open homes going that day. The level of organisation, your wife, Bonnie, she was heavily pregnant at the time with baby number four, and the house was just like so organised, and the kids were so well behaved.
It's not like that. I mean, you got us on a particularly good quiet moment. There might have been 10 minutes of quiet, but it is chaos. Like, four kids, 95% of people listening to this, four kids sounds like a crazy amount of kids. Like, it must sound nuts.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, and it is. And yeah, I totally understand like that. Yeah. And I know that because when I had one kid, one of my friends announced they were pregnant with their fourth, and I thought, what the fucking crazy? Like, what are they up to? So I know how it sounds. I know how it is. And if anyone comes to my house, it's just chaos all the time. And it's full on, and it's tantrums and tears and happy dances, and it's just all of the senses all at once. So that period you came, I don't know what's going on. That's not reality.
Yeah. Oh no, but I've thoroughly enjoyed the relationship with not so much you, Seamus, just because I haven't seen much. I feel like Steve's the secretary of the podcast.
Yeah, that's fair. He's very good. He's very thorough and very detailed in terms of his admin.
Mm.
I am
the talent.
The talent.
He's just gonna,
I was trying to think of what I was right. what I bring.
Okay,
to
so
it.
Steve's like the Rick Salid, so you're like the Mark Ellis.
Something like that. Yeah. I am a lot looser with my podcast administration.
How do you structure that relationship? Like, Steve, how do you not get fucked off with him for not pulling his weight?
I do.
He does.
Oh, yeah. No, I do.
We actually hate each other.
I get very passive aggressive with my communications to him. And you know how you can see if someone's like seen a message? I'll send him a little message and then he won't look at it. I know it'll show up on his phone, but he won't look at it. But I know he's got it. We've got this really
we know each other really, really well. He did it yesterday. He's like, are you going to reply to, I remember who it was. I won't say who it was. Are you going to reply to so-and-so? And I saw it and I went, fuck's sake. I replied straight away and then I didn't close the loop. I didn't do anything. I just left it. And he's right. I didn't look at the message so that he would see that I'd seen his message. It works for us. It works. It doesn't
work for us. It's a funny relationship because over time you realize you're not going to change someone. So it's kind of like, okay, he's not going to respond to emails. I'm going to respond to emails. That's fine. He'll pick up the slack in some other area. And so it's kind of like
he'll listen to every minute of every episode.
Yeah, he listens to every episode. I don't do that. So you kind of just find things that work for you and that you enjoy doing.
Yeah, play to your strengths, I guess.
It's like a marriage, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I suppose it is. And it's, and because of the history of your relationship and how well you know each other, you can have these difficult conversations.
Yeah, and we can be brutally honest with each other,
which
too.
Which is so important.
Yeah.
Rather than letting things fester.
Yeah. but even editorially, like if someone brings up, you know, an angle of a podcast or something, like we'll just be like, no, fuck, I don't like that. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's a waste of time. A stupid question. Let's
move on. You didn't know the person so well, you might think, oh shit, I might have to approach that a bit delicately. But
vice versa, if you really want to fight for an idea, then you've got grounds to do so and be heard as well.
How much editing do you guys do? You guys do much editing?
No, not really.
Only if the guest wants something cut out.
Yeah. Ideally, we don't. We do this thing at the start where we tell the guest that we want you to be happy with what we put out there. We're not here to get you. We're not here to create a sensational headline. We want you to have editorial control. So we're going to ask you some questions about some really difficult moments, if you're okay with it. But know that nothing is going to go out there that you don't want out there. Mm. And most of the time, 98% of the time, no edits are asked for. But just by saying that, it gives them a security, a safety blanket that they're in the safe space. And it just seems to work. And that is a big part of what we do, creating the space to have the conversations and the preamble before we record, you know, making them feel comfortable, sort of just like just being good humans.
You guys genuinely are. Like, what you see is what you get.
Thank you very much.
There's no act whatsoever. Yeah.
I think you get found out. I mean, yeah. Anyone gets found out over 90 minutes. Like, you can put on an act for 10, 20, 30. Like, and often in the second half of the episodes, the real personality comes out, especially if they've had a couple of beers. But, like, people can see through it, right? Yeah. People can sense bullshit and they can sense authenticity. Mm. And it's just the most powerful thing.
Yeah. Well, I've got so much of you guys, like in terms of just the generosity of things. Like, you being from a radio background, it was always, I don't know, I suppose it's like a scarcity mentality. When you're on radio, you're never supposed to talk about any other radio show because then the thinking is you're giving them publicity. Mm. As if someone's going to be listening going, all these other buttons on the radio there. What are they? Oh, I must, you know, it's a really weird mentality, but I'm finding the podcast thing and you guys, I mean, you put me into the same social media person as you guys and Steve, you sent early on in my podcast days, you sent me a link to a Diary of a CEO episode where Stephen Bartlett talks about how he grew his podcast and it's made me a more generous person as well.
Oh, awesome.
Every now and then I go back and I have one of those moments. I'll be like, those motherfuckers, they got Mark Ellis. Yeah. And then I pull my head in and think, that's the wrong attitude. You've got to be happy for these guys.
Yeah. Well, it helps everyone,
yeah.
Right? Like, the more podcasts that are doing well and bringing in big numbers creates more interest in advertisers and sponsors, and hopefully this thing can kick up a gear and we can all leave our jobs.
Yeah. But, you are nice guys and you deserve all the success you get. But you are both still working full-time jobs.
Kind of. I've carved a cool little niche where I'm like 20, 30 hours a week working in football administration back in my sweet spot where I used to be, but it's contract, so I'm not obliged to be in the office. I try and have some FaceTime with the office where I can and then do some other bits and pieces. So the juggling act of a full-time job plus a podcast was really, really challenging. Mm. And I often found when I was working working that job, you know, when you would excuse yourself or get time away to go and do a podcast, man, my attention would never fully be on it because I'd be thinking, shit, like, what's happening with my phone? What am I required to do in my job that's paying my bills? Like, where's the slippage? What am I going to have to make up? Now, having, you know, a bit more flexibility and being kind of the master of your own destiny, it's opened up a whole lot of other opportunities, but it means that you can, you can focus on kind of key areas as well. And it's a weird one with podcasts because I don't listen to that many other podcasts unless I'm researching. It's a kind of a weird thing. So you can, honing your craft of getting better is an interesting one when you've got more time on your hands because you just get more – I think you just get better by doing more.
Do you listen back to your work and like self-critique?
I should do more of it. I used to do a lot in the early days and it helped pick up – you know when you – I don't know if you happened to you when you were starting. When someone's telling a story and we'll be like, like encouraging, like verbally encouraging them that you're into it. And then you'd listen back to Annette. You're like, oh, shut the fuck up. Holy shit. Like, you just ruined a story by continuing going,
I've caught myself doing it recently, like falling back into it of like, mmming for encouragement and being like, shut the fuck up. Yeah, just shut up. Yeah.
But there's lots of little things like that where. And I go back, it just annoys me and just turns a phrase and just like I can be so critical of my performance.
Yeah,
I'm the same. And which is why I should still listen back, but where's the time in the day? But I know we could always be improving, but I feel like by, fixing a lot of those really rookie mistakes early doors made a big difference.
I find my biggest work on, I think, is I fucking waffle copter. Before I get to a question. So I'll kind of make this big statement about some sort of thing and then I'll catch myself making this big statement and then I'll go, fuck, I need to ask a question. And then I'll quickly like crowbar a question in there that's got nothing to do with the point that I was making before. And whenever I listen back, I'm like, just stop being so verbose. Like, just ask a question.
Get to the point.
Exactly. I did it just then.
Yeah. I've sort of stopped editing. I used to go through and like edit them every week, and then I tend to stutter, and I think my brain and my mouth work at different sort of paces. So I'd get to the end of editing, and I'd find most of the stuff I edited out were just like little stutters that I made, and then I'd be full of self-loathing at the end. I'd be like, oh, I'm a piece of shit. So I've stopped editing it. I feel like the more AI becomes a thing, the more that sort of normalness of, human conversation and the nuances that come along with it will become, I don't know, more important or more valuable. I don't know.
I think it's endearing to leave the false, like within reason, to leave the false starts and to leave the, I'm off on a tangent and then I've gone, oh, I'm not actually making sense here. Let me come back and start again. I think that's a natural conversation. Mm. So the kind of my read on a podcast is that's what you want. You want to be eavesdropping on a conversation that's really, really interesting and just be a bystander, which quite often I find becomes my role in a podcast. Not becomes my role, but I catch myself just being engrossed in the conversation that's happening in front of me and then interjecting every now and again when I kind of feel it appropriate. But that's where
– do you interject every now and then? I thought it was just Steve doing all the talking. You guys hear that a lot? That you sound the same?
All the time. All the time. Yeah. Even when I listen back sometimes, I think, I don't remember asking that question.
That's a good question by me, Shane.
Yeah, that wasn't me at all.
Yeah, Steve, how do you fit it all in? Like, your time management must be remarkable. So you're a journalist for the New Zealand Herald. You do the podcast, which is incredible, as we've established, and you're a dad of four.
Yeah.
And I see you on social media on the weekend, like with your kids at soccer. And so you're not even like an absent dad. Like
I'd say the life hack, the podcast hack is that preparation for the podcast is listening to other podcasts. And the best time to listen to a podcast is when you're cleaning the house after the kids are in bed. I do a shitload of dishes every night. There's so many, like, endless dishes, and I'm listening to a podcast. And that is work and work at the same time. So that certainly helps. I've got a great job where I work from home. So I don't waste time in my day traveling. I do 4 days a week in Hamilton and one in Auckland. So I've got that balance right. And we have been in the fortunate enough position where the podcast is earning a little bit of money now, where we can outsource a lot of the jobs that we used to do all of ourselves. You mentioned a marketing guy, Marcus, who does our social media now, who's amazing. So I'm hands off. Like, now we record the episode. I research the episode. We record the episode. He listens through it, picks out clips, sends it to our video producer, Jacques, who's also amazing. And between them, they pretty much take care of everything. Mm. So all of my focus is just on prepping for the next episode, nailing that. We've added ambassadors in, and it's work. But yeah, it is a lot. Look, it's full on. Like, days are full on. I can't really explain. Like, I'm up at 6 in the morning making 3 breakfasts and 3 lunches and getting the kids out the door, and then it's working, and then it's swimming lessons, and then it's dishes and getting to bed, and then podcast prep, and it's just rinse and repeat. And weekends is football, but it's fun. Like, it doesn't feel like work. It's just,
plus you've got an amazing wife, Bonnie.
Oh, shout out to Bon. Yeah. Bon is the best. She holds the place together. You can't run an operation like the Holloway House without a Bonnie Holloway.
Yeah, she must be incredibly supportive and encouraging.
She's great. Yep. She, I don't know, the perfect companion for me. So supportive, so good with the kids, and she's been so understanding with this podcast. Like I said, for the first 2 years, it was basically a passion project.
Yeah, it's the same, like, same say, as going, like, out,
same
for
as
nine
going
holes.
Out for golf. It was, but she saw the bigger picture, and she listens to most episodes, and she's just been just incredibly supportive. Yeah.
So how did you guys meet?
So I had a best friend whose name was Ross McKenzie, and Bonnie was his little sister. So
she still is.
Oh, you're your mate's little sister.
Yeah. She still is. She still is.
Yeah,
Ross's
she still
little
is.
Sister.
Yeah.
She always will be. Yeah. Isn't your mate's little sister a no-go?
Yeah. So we made I made a rule. I said, look, if you're going to hook up with your mate's little sister, you got to marry her. So I married her, and then you got to have 4 babies with her. Short and story, Melville United win the Northern Premier League in 2009. Big night on the piss. Everyone's back at my place and we're going out into town. Me and Bon are the last two to leave. We couldn't all fit in the taxi, so we stay behind. We end up hooking up. We don't go into town. We don't meet the rest of the team, but everyone is so drunk they don't notice. They come back in bed the next morning, because we had this house where people would just come. It was quite close to town. People would just come back and they'd crash anywhere. I woke up next to my now wife, Bon, and her brother, Ross, climbed into bed. He had no idea we'd been hooking up that night, and he jumped into bed with us and our other friend. And it was just in the morning, like, oh, what the hell's going on? What a hell of a night. No one knew what had happened, but that was the beginning of a beautiful romance.
How long did you keep it secret from your mate for?
Ah, She went overseas quite soon after that. So
she had to leave the country.
Yeah, she went to India for 6 months. I don't remember the timeline, but yeah, I don't think he found out.
Right.
I mean, he knows now.
Yeah, well, now he knows. He knows now.
What a bombshell! Yeah. So who's the dad of these four kids? Stephen.
You got the exclusive, Dom.
Yeah. So what does the future hold? Like, where do you? I mean, it's really hard to plan with the podcast thing, isn't it? Like, it's your growth is sort of never in a linear sort of fashion. But like a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, where do you wish things would be?
It's a question I think about a lot, and it's so hard to know what's around the corner because it seems like the picture changes every couple of months. Like, things were really gaining steam. Good sponsors on board, PlayStation and Xbox, and things look like, you know, they were really taken off. And then it's kind of like the recession, and then advertisers are pulling back, and you're not sure when, you know, the tanks are going to be full again. So it's hard. Our thing right now is we've got this big audience. We have... I don't know, 150,000 downloads a month, like an enormous amount of people paying attention to us. So we're trying to figure out what to do with that. And there is the traditional advertising and sponsorship, which is working really well. But we've got a few business ideas. We're not quite ready to announce them yet. But we sort of want to push people in a direction which is going to be mutually beneficial to us and the audience. So we think by creating a couple of different income streams along with the podcast, that might help us just become a business. Because at the moment, we are a business. You know, we've got an accountant and a marketer and a video producer. And it's weird to think of how far this thing has come in 4 years. And it's only really the last 18 months where it's like, okay, this could be long-term career. Like, this could be this could be the next 20 years if we play it right.
Yeah, I think like the recording an ep or recording something is the highlight of my week. I think as long as that is a constant in my week, I will be happy. Mm. It's great. Like, we started this Hambassadors thing, which is really interesting because for a long time we were just kind of facilitators to have a guest come in. But as we've progressed, people become more and more interested in us as people and what we have to say, which is a weird platform as well to have. So, yeah, like, looking at different ways to kind of keep that going so that you get to do the fun things and you get to do the parts that you really enjoy is really important. And how do you scale it and how do you make it work? Mm. Again, that's why it's important that all podcasters kind of succeed at the same time so that the market that doesn't maybe understand the power of a podcast goes, oh, wow, okay, this is a real thing. This is a real thing that we can invest in and that we can get returns on so that we can all do it full time and quit all of our jobs.
That's a long way of saying we don't know. I don't know.
You know.
Yeah, that was one of my waffle cups. Yeah.
I've found from like a personal perspective, it's taken me in glorious directions that I could never have imagined. Yeah. Like since having Miyamoto on the podcast, like me and her have done some the Q&A sort of like public speaking engagements together where I'm sort of it's basically like a live podcast, but I'm just helping her shape and share her story, and I could never have imagined that happening.
Yeah,
but it's wonderful.
Yeah,
and the excitement's wonderful, but there is also that element of terror. It's like, okay, where is this going? When is it going to start to pay the bills?
Yeah,
but yes, Steve, you more than anyone with your understanding wife, it must be like, okay, all right, mate.
There's opportunities to take some pretty big risks, but we've just bought a new house, and with four kids, a new house. Like, I'm fairly risk averse at this point, so I don't know. We'll just keep going as we are, and see what opportunities pop up, I guess.
Yeah, and we're recording this in Auckland. You guys travel from Hamilton to do these things.
Yep.
Most of them in Auckland studio. Yeah,
yeah, pretty much all of them now. Yeah, the video aspect has become really important to us. So we did some in a Hamilton studio, but there was no cameras and setup. We've found that, you know, by clipping out the best bits, and you do the same thing. Just the reach, the organic reach, especially on TikTok, goes crazy. Some viral clips will have over 1 million views, and it's just the way that sort of grows. It's like the growth model is so good with what we do, with long-form interviews with a diverse range of people, because if you do it well, it will sprinkle through their community and people will listen to it and then think, shit, that was brilliant. And they'll look through your catalog and think, oh, so-and-so is interesting, but we've done 140. Yes, surely they will find someone else there that they would like to hear an interview of. You nail the second one, hopefully you've got a listener for life. So we really are enjoying at the moment just trying to think of new diverse areas. I've seen you doing the same thing, Uncle Tix, you know, that sort of social media.
Yeah.
you know, his huge TikTok following, Instagram following. It's, I don't know. It's a journey.
Yeah, it's frustrating because I know the way I consume podcasts personally. Like I'll say Dax Shepard, Armchair Expert. I'll scroll through, find a name that I'm interested in and then listen. And now I see people doing the same thing with me and probably yours. And you're like, no, they're all good.
Yeah.
They're hidden gems. People you don't know of, they're good. Give it a go. But it's exciting. And it's exciting to be on this path with you guys. Stop trying to make Hamilton a thing.
No, we will never stop. I'm even wearing the hat.
When I left Palmerston North and the radio station there to start working at The Edge, it was still based in Hamilton. So I lived in Hamilton for like 6 months. It was the bleakest, most awful winter of my life.
How long ago was that though?
Oh, it's like 20 years.
Yeah, there we go. See? Fell into my trap. You walked in like a big dopey bear. Straight into it.
Oh, no, but it was like we'd leave work after doing the breakfast radio show at like 11 a.m. and it would still be like a deep fog in the city.
Yeah.
People would be like, balloons over Waikato Zone. I was like, I can't see them. It's foggy.
Yeah. So lots changed. Lots changed, Dom, in 20 years.
What? There's just nothing happening in the city.
There's no balloons anymore.
Balloons over Waikato is the highlight of the holiday calendar. Every morning, balloons over
A couple of quick ones before we go. This is one of those questions you ask where you already know the answer. What's your biggest fuck up in terms of if you need a cue name, David Nicol?
Yeah.
Is this the only monumental cock up?
No.
Well, Danny Morrison too. We lost two episodes. So we used to record in this Hamilton studio. We still sometimes do. And I got trained by the ACC staff of how to work the system. It's like this next gen system. It's kind of old technology. I had it. I understood, you know, the microphones were on, red light on each, press record, all good. What I hadn't been told was that you need to move the mouse every 30 minutes. Otherwise, the program is going to lock it. It's going to automatically log you out. So we do 2 hours with David Nika, and he's never done like a long-form interview like that before, talking about Tyson Fury and his vulnerabilities and just like a hell of an episode. He messages us the next day, first thing next morning, hey boys, that podcast was amazing. Like, thank you so much. Like, I enjoyed it so much. I can't wait for you to release it.
So bad. I'll listen on Thinkback as fuck.
And then I go to check the audio.
We checked it that night.
Yeah, that's right. We checked it that night. I knew that
night. That night was a disaster.
That night. And realized that we didn't catch a single second.
Because it
logged us out, so we lost the whole thing. We didn't even get the start. We got nothing.
Not only that, but we also got locked out of the studio too. So we said goodbye, and I could see the terror. Like, Stephen's logging out. I could see the terror in his eyes, and I thought, fuck, something's wrong here. We say goodbye to David, and then we go back to go in, and he's like, you've got the dongle to get us back in, eh? And I was like, no, I do not.
That's right.
So we're fumbling around in this office, looking in people's drawers, trying to find a way to get back into the studio, the whole while thinking, fuck, I don't think we got that episode. And then next morning, it'll be fine. It'll be saved in the system.
There'll be a way to retrieve it.
Yeah, I thought the tech geeks would be able to save it. So urgent calls.
It'll be in the system.
Someone can save it. You're there should be a way. And there wasn't
there
a way.
There was not
so
a way.
So anyway, David messaged me and I had to reply. I'm so sorry. I felt sick. How long did I feel sick? 4 days of just feeling absolute shit. He was one of our biggest guests at the time too. It was such
and he's not been back in the country since.
Devastating. And the other one was Danny Morrison. So
I reckon Morrison was almost worse.
Danny Morrison, I don't know if you know his story well, but
you're former New Zealand cricketer in the 90s?
Yeah.
Famous for getting ducks.
Yes.
Like, the worst batsman ever.
So
that's a terrible way to fabulous cricket.
An incredibly rich cricket story, and people know that quite well. But we touched on areas which perhaps people don't know, which was the suicide of his sister, losing everything in the global financial crisis. And it was a super vulnerable episode. Verge of tears. There might have been some tears. But it was over video call, and he was in Abu Dhabi, and the
StreamYard, which I referenced before, is banned in the United Arab Emirates, so you can't use it. So we had to use Zoom. So StreamYard would record it, and then even if the line was wonky, there's some widgets in the background that smoothed it all out. So we'd had dodgy connections before, and that all worked out fine. But when we used this Zoom, it was same thing. 2 hours, maybe two and a bit hours.
Yeah.
Listen back, and there was 45 minutes of just completely unsalvageable audio, and it was right at those moments where he was talking about the loss of his sister, and he was like bearing his soul.
Yeah, we tried hard to piece it together, but we just couldn't. Like, it was all based around this rebuilding after this horrific middle, and we're like, fuck.
And then same thing, being like, really sorry, it hasn't worked. And he's like, oh man, bugger. Well, we'll try and make it work some other time. Like, scene. Like, just
fair enough.
Oh my fair god. Enough. It's just embarrassing. You feel so amateur.
David
Nico, amazing. I've just been in Sydney the previous weekend running the marathon. I didn't see him at all, but I saw on Instagram today he ran the half marathon. Did like an hour 22.
Yeah,
guys, just sub 4 minute Ks. And he's carrying around a lot of muscle as well. He's not a light dude.
Fair play to him as well. He's a proper ambassador. So we retold that story in a speaking gig that we had. And then tagged it up for social, tagged him in, and said, what do you reckon, round two? And he came back and said, yep, boys, I'm back in Hamilton in December. Let's make it happen. So, yeah, redemption. There's a redemption there in some way, shape, or form, hopefully.
And do you guys get many people coming to you asking to come on? Or
we do now, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've reached a tipping point where the audience is big enough that it's in people's interest. And we get a lot of publicists come to us when someone's got a new book out or an album or whatever it is. They want some publicity. They come to us, which is really cool, because the hardest part of the journey in those early and mid stages is finding regular guests and people wanting to come on your show. So we're really fortunate to be in a position where people want to come on our show. And we're as far forward planned as we've ever been. I think we've got 5-6 episodes in the can.
Yeah.
And for most of our journey, we have been working on a week-to-week basis. I remember talking to you in the early days and you had about like 2 months worth backed up and we're like, oh, fuck, I don't know who we've got this week.
I left that conversation with you guys with anxiety on your behalf. I was like, how do they do it? Yeah. Like, one person lets you down and you're fucked for the next week.
Yeah.
A lot of stressful weeks.
To pick up on a point you made earlier on about the radio promo celebrity kind of a cycle and people coming in and doing like a 10-minute stint or 5-minute stint in 10 different places. Now that we're on that kind of distribution list, it's a really cool point of difference to be included in those, because it is something different for the person that's coming in to be, yeah, we'll talk about whatever you're promoting now, but we've actually got a whole breadth of other stuff that we want to talk about. So I'd like to think from their perspective, it's a break from the monotony of maybe some of the other promo stuff that they're doing at the time.
Yeah. I really like that tone. I'm humbled when that happens, because you think, okay, we've got half a day of promo with this person. So to do a 90-minute podcast, it's a big chunk of that time.
100%.
Yeah.
When generally they go for mass, like scattergun, and do as many places as what they can. And what about your dream list? Who would you bet like three dream New Zealanders be?
Oh, good. You go first.
So,
buying time again.
Well, he asked me on an ambassadors episode as well.
I heard this. Yeah. He said Joe Rogan. Like anyone in the world, alive or dead.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan.
Yeah, so I got cancelled on social media straight away.
Did you? Why?
You were the only one who endorsed what I said. I think, because Brody Kane jumped on me big time. Was like,
well, I think Rogan gets a bad rep. Like, if you listen to enough Rogan, it's like he's kind, he's hardworking, he's disciplined, he's anti drug, he's a good family man.
Yeah.
You know, you never hear any scandal about him.
Yeah.
And so what, he doesn't like the vaccine? I don't know. Have I missed something else? Is there something?
I don't know. I don't want to get cancelled.
But still, you know, while we're shitting on you, Shay,
yeah.
out of all the people in the world you could choose from, Rogan?
Yeah. I panicked.
So, Stephen Adams, if he wanted to do it, I feel like he would never want to do a long form podcast. But if he was up for it and wanted to come in with good energy, he would have the most amazing stories. And he's such a like a hard case funny Kiwi. And no one, we've had a few episodes that are people that was sort of plucked from obscurity. Mark Ellis is one. He had been off the grid for about 10 years. Huge episode, our biggest one we've ever had, because people hadn't heard from him for so long. Same with Paul Henry before he sort of made his media rebirth. He hadn't done interviews in years and years, and we had him on. Same with Chris Kearns. So when you have these big guests that no one has heard of for so long, it's just magic. Stephen Adams would have that effect. Scott Robertson, I know that we've both been trying to.
Let's compare razor notes.
To get him for a while. You know that story you had about how you text him And then he responded, I've had the same text. And it was like the same sign off with Razor. And it's like, hey, mate, I only do one podcast a year. Try again next year. And I did the same thing. I texted him on the first of the
January. Yeah. I was a bit cooler. I think I waited until like the 4th. But I was thinking about it on the 1st, 2nd and 3rd.
I was reminding him on the 31st, like, do not forget to text Razor. Stroke of midnight. It'll be brilliant.
At the time of recording this, the guest on my podcast this week is Dr. Ben O'Keefe, who was he's an eye surgeon. He was the referee of the Crusaders Chiefs Super Rugby final. Yeah. We went through some of the mean messages he got, and one of them was like, and we turned this into a clip. It's like, you probably won't see this message because you got Razor's cock in your mouth. So I'm thinking, do I send this clip to Razor as well? Like, maybe. Yeah. Or do I just leave him alone and take the fucking hint?
Yeah. I feel like he's gone.
I think
anyone's
getting him for a while.
But Stephen Adams would be phenomenal. Like, what does he earn? Like, $30 million a year or something? Yeah. It's crazy money. And just the backstory, like, one of how many kids?
Yeah.
Like 11 kids or something?
I had 12 in my head, but that might be his jersey number.
And when you see clips of his teammates arriving to a game and they're dressed up in like high-end designer gear and he's got like a bush shirt jandals. Yeah. Like, he just seems like a remarkable
so
man.
So different. Yeah. Jermaine Clement I would really like to have on the pod because he doesn't do interviews. Mm. Like, I've not seen or heard him do anything long form. I think it'd be fascinating to kind of unpick his brain.
So guys that hate interviews.
Yeah.
We're going to break them. We're going to make it so good they're going to like doing it.
Psychologist, whatever. What is it? You want to make him love you?
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, totally. That's the object of every podcast is to have them come away thinking, these guys are pretty cool.
All right, good to know. That's good intel. I'll go for Brett McKenzie then. I'll go for the other one. Yeah. And what about international?
Oh, here we go again.
This is your chance of redemption.
I still stand by Graham Norton.
Oh, okay.
I still stand by Graham Norton. I think I would be fascinated by what hasn't made the show, or the links that he goes to, or his method to do what he does. I think actually secretly he's been like a really big influence in terms of like watching and asking questions and honing your craft. He's been that would be really fascinating for me.
Mm. Yeah, I think I said Tiger Woods, I think, would be, he'd have some
hands. Yeah.
Yeah, he'd be it.
Oh, how good would that be? What a contact? Life. I wish. Because I see you guys do some interviews, and I'm like, I know what these guys are doing here. They're playing the long game. Like, when you have someone from Auckland City boxing or whatever, it's they're weaseling their way to Addison. Yeah. Have you had Steve Williams on yet? Tiger's old caddy?
No. Would love to get him. Can't get a hold. I need to get a contact. Are you trying to get him too?
I haven't tried just when you mentioned Tiger Woods, but actually, I don't think it'd be a good gateway to Tiger. Tiger Woods remarkable. Like, when he had all this chaos going on, he was playing some of the best golf of his life.
Yeah. If you could get him to tell his story and open up on the whole journey, forget about it.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Hey, it's been wonderful to sit down with you guys today. It's really cool. I love what you're doing, and I feel like you guys are setting the benchmark for podcasts in New Zealand.
Cheers, Dom. It's been a really cool experience being on the other side. We had Dom on our podcast, what do you say, about a year ago?
Over a year ago,
and I spoke at the start about what a fan I was because I used to deliver the paper in the morning and I'd listen to you on the edge as I'm doing it. So a bit of a surreal moment coming full circle and you interviewing us. Me and Shay were talking about it on the way in. Like, again, we have so many pinch ourselves moments across this ride. We're like, well, okay, that just happened. They're starting to become a little bit more normal, but we still – yeah, I just really appreciate it. So, thanks for cutting us in your space.
Oh, yeah, that's what. Yeah, one more thing. Sorry, I was wrapping up, but how are you guys coping with the level of fame? It must be like a nice level of fame. You know what I mean? It's not like Lord or something.
But she'd be a good guest.
Must be nice that you're at the age and stage that you guys are both at in life to have this sort of recognition or.
Yeah, fame's weird in New Zealand. It's like no one's really famous, but it's weird, cool. Being recognized by people because of what you do, right? Because we are, when people come up to us in a cafe or something and they say, oh, you guys between two beers, I love what you do. That means they love the conversations we're facilitating and they're fans and they've listened to I just really value people's time. And to give us 90 minutes to listen to us over and over and over again, some people listen to every episode. It just blows my mind and I'm just really, appreciative of it. So I certainly wouldn't call us famous, but it's cool. It's a cool experience. What's yours?
Yeah, it's same thing. I've got a weird thing with it. Like, I love it and I'm humbled by it, but I'm also sometimes I kind of just want to not have it.
Well, it doesn't help that you're wearing a ambassador hat
and a pretty beard. I know it's a weird. I think the weirdest one that we had. I'll just share this anecdote. We were watching. We were at a FIFA Women's World Cup game, and we were watching. And I thought we were talking quite quietly to one another about some kind of questionable subject matter at times, as we do, having known each other so familiarly. And then the lady in front like pulled her phone out and then went to Spotify. And then scrolled to the podcast and then like pointed at our photo to the person next to her. And I was like, hey, that's us, like, over her shoulder. And she was fucking mortified. I was like, hey, it's like really nice, like nice to meet you. I'm Seamus. She's like, yeah, I thought it was your voice, but I wasn't sure who it was. It was, that sort of stuff is cool.
I mean, it's because you've made a connection with them, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really good
really,
way.
Really, really cool.
That's a really good way of looking at it. That's a much better way, much better lens to look at it. I'll use that now moving forward.
Yeah, you may.
Thank you very much.
Well, you may, as long as you can. Are you going to do the wrap up? Can you do the wrap up? You do this on your podcast all the time. God. Am I throwing you on the spot here?
You are. That's okay. I can try and I don't feel like it's my place to do it, but I'll try.
I'm sorry. I'm being lazy.
Yeah, I won't. It's been really cool. It has been really cool. Yeah. Thank you very much for making this happen for us. It's probably our highest profile appearance on somebody else's podcast. And a cool experience. And thank you to my friend over here, who I love very dearly, for his friendship and his care for me. It's really, really special to have that friendship in your life and to have someone that cares that much, that they are willing to have those challenging conversations and, bring them back up again.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Not that Steve needs it, because he seems very, very organized and disciplined with his life and his time management. But, yeah, would you be that person for him?
I'd like to think I would be, but he seems to really have it together. He's like, despite the chaos, he does. But I do, I'd like to think if there was a moment or a time where that was needed, or that he needed that sensitive ear or that sage advice, that I'd be there and be able to kind of provide something or at least listen.
Yeah. How good is the question, by the way? How are you with vulnerability and showing your emotion, Steve? And
then start crying. fucking jackpot.
Oh, no, it's good. I've had fertility struggles, so I've been unable to have kids. So I'm very envious of the family dynamic you've got. But I've sort of found, like, through my mental health struggles over the years, it's made me more compassionate and vulnerable. So I cry pretty easily these days as well. And I think it's a marvelous thing. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah,
I could probably count on one hand the amount of times I cried through my 20s and 30s. Now I'll just cry thinking about something that I'm grateful for.
I think it's mine for podcasts.
What's that?
I just exclusively cry on podcasts now. That's my thing.
Why Bonnie must be like, he never cries at home.
Yeah.
Who is this guy?
Who is this emotions?
Guy? Anyway, I love you guys. I'm in awe of what you're doing, and it's wonderful to be in the same space as you, and I genuinely value our friendship. Thank you so much for coming on the Dom Harvey podcast, Steve and Seamus, Between Two Beers.
Cheers, Dom. Been awesome.
Thank you.
Steve and Seamus, Between Two Beers, on the Dom Harvey podcast. Again, apologies for the sound issues through that. Thanks for listening all the way through. Love to hear your thoughts. You can get hold of me anytime with any feedback, guest suggestions, tips on how to improve, what you like, what you don't like, whatever. I won't take it to heart if you don't like it, that's fine. DomHarveyNZ@gmail.com or on Instagram, DomHarveyNZ. And if you haven't done so already, it would be incredible if you could rate or leave a review for the podcast if the platform you listen to allows. Just before I sign off, big thanks to my friends at Radix Nutrition. From their state-of-the-art factory in the Waikato, they have plans to change the world through nutrition. And since I've got to know the team pretty well, I have absolutely no doubt they will succeed. Give them a follow on Instagram and check out the incredible work they are up to at Radix Nutrition on Instagram or radixnutrition.co.nz on the web. Radix, spelled R-A-D-I-X. The biggest thing you could do, though, would be to go and buy something from them. I promise you, you will not regret it. Their products are simply world-class. Okay, that's it. Another week done on the Dom Harvey podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. Can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And I do hope to see you next week. on the Dom Harvey podcast. See ya.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.